Well, welcome back to the Jazzed Podcast. I'm Matt Sanchez. We have a special guest, someone that I don't know if a lot of people know who you are, but I know that they know what you were or who you were, so to speak. Everyone knows the Jazz Bear, every jazz fan. The Jazz Bear to me was part of why you go to a jazz game. The fun, kind of the antics, the comedy, just the excitement. And this is the guy who created that. His name's John Abzi. For years, your name was a secret. I think, you know, that's how you wanted it. I think I'm going to ask you a little bit about, you know, why. And anyway, how's it going? Introduce yourself a little bit.
Matthew Sanchez. Hey, man, I it's so good to see you. It's always fun to see friendly faces from the past. But I was a jazz bear for 25 years, and I appreciate the intro. That was very nice of you. The one thing though is, you know, everybody's always like, oh, you know, he did this or he did that. But there was an army that helped me out, you know, like the old Grant Harrisons and Teresa Pryors and, you know, Randy Rigby's and those guys. I mean, everybody was there. Tim Howells, Nate Randall, Craig Sanders, a lot of people in my corner that helped me out to make the character what it is today or was back then.
You started in 94. So how did the bear, because I mean, I think I know, but for people who may not know, how did it happen? How did you start being the bear?
Totally by accident. I mean, honestly, my story is long, so I'm gonna make it brief. So really what happened is there was a CBA team in Fargo, North Dakota called the Fargo Fever, and CBA back then was the Continental Basketball Association. That's how old I am. But I started there because I was in college, and it was $25 a night, so it worked out great. Worked there for a little bit, and then I got a call. Actually, I got fired from that job because of the stunts and stuff that I was doing, because I was sledding back then, and they thought I was going to kill myself or kill somebody else. So then a team up in Winnipeg, Manitoba called, and they were the NBL, and Tom Nesselke, if you remember him, was the commissioner for the league. So I went up there for the summer and actually got paid considerably more. And then I came down or back down into the States to go back to school, because I was going to school at Morehead State University. And I got a call from a team out in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and which was another CBA team. And ended up down in Sioux Falls going to school and working for them. And the whole time still, you know, I was still in the National Guard. I had just gotten back from Desert Storm. So before all the mascotting gigs, and then started mascotting. And when I was in Sioux Falls, I met the Phoenix Gorilla, and that was the first time that I realized that mascotting was an actual career. So that was awesome. Then I sent out resumes to all the NBA teams. Grant Harrison called and said that there were going to be tryouts here in Salt Lake for three teams, Sacramento, Seattle, and Utah. And when I got out here, there was some amazing talent, a lot of really good people. So I didn't think I had a chance. And when we got done, I went home. And I'm skipping over a ton, man. There's a lot more to it. But when I got home, I totally didn't think I'd get a call back. And then I got a call back, and I came back out for second tryouts. And it was me and Greg Holton, who was the old Golden Eagles mascot, Icy. He was amazing. And then Eli Akins, who ended up going to the Globetrotters, and he was the Eli the Fly Akins because he could jump out of the ceiling. Came back for second tryouts, went home again, didn't think I had the job, got a call from all three teams and an offer to work for them for Sacramento, Seattle, and Utah. And I panicked, and I didn't call anybody back. And out of the blue, 2 weeks later, Grant Harrison called me and was just like, hey, John, this is Grant Harrison. Just trying to see, did you take a job with one of the other teams? And I was like, nope, I really haven't. He goes, well, what are you thinking? And I said, I don't know, Grant. I go, you know, because I'm a little farm boy, and I couldn't leave my little, you know, safety of the farm. So he just said, do you want to come out here and work for us? And I said, yep, I'll do that. So packed up. Cool. Shout out to Utah. So if it wasn't for him calling me, I wouldn't have the job.
Yeah.
I was too afraid.
And Grant was retired from the Jazz now, but he worked for the Jazz for a long time. I think he's one of the original. Wouldn't he work for the Stars? Like, Grant worked for the organization forever.
Him and Dan Roberts. Yeah. And back then, I mean, you know, there was Larry Bombs. There was all kinds of people. Yeah, we had a really fun family organization back then. I mean, everybody was really tight.
Not directly, but Grant is the person who first hired me.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Grant.
Because my first ever job was the Cypress Crew.
Oh, my! I remember that.
The first year they ever had the Cypress Crew. Okay. I
remember that.
So I did that one year, and then I became a game ops intern.
Yep.
For 2.5 years, right? And then on and on to different things, fan relations, and then intern again, and then, you know, into marketing.
I was really excited when you got hired on. That was awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, because, you know, you meet, and you know, at that time, hundreds of people a day. I don't know if you remember meeting me. I definitely remember because, you know, lifelong Jazz fan, I had no idea who the Bear was, right? Who's in the, no one knows, right? Side note, I always thought it was Luke Larson.
That's awesome. A lot of people did, yeah.
And you know, Luke used to be, you know, your assistant who did everything. Because, you know, he had a recognizable face and you would see his face.
Yep.
So people would be like, oh, okay, well, maybe that's him. Anyway, so it was my first job or my first day as an intern for Game Ops. And I don't know if you remember Chris McAleese and yeah. Taylor McFarland.
I worked with Chris over at the Stallions.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Good people. And our first role as an intern, and you know, intern's job is we were supposed to clean out the promotions cage, you know, before it became your office. Yep. It was just kind of a side closet and it was just filled with stuff.
Just stuff jammed in there.
Because it was the start of the season and this is all just the stuff from the last season. And they said, we want you guys to clean this and organize it and whatever. And then you came in because, you know, your kind of cage, the Bear Cave, was like just around the corner.
Yep.
And you're just, you introduce yourself, you know, as John, but you didn't introduce yourself as Bear. And, you know, you're just like, oh, do you guys need anything? You know, well, welcome. And we're just like, oh, thanks. We didn't even know who you were. And then somebody came in and they're like, do you guys know who that was? And we're like, what? Yeah, his name was John.
It's John, some dorky guy.
And then they said, you know, you can't tell anybody this, but that was the Bear. And instantly, I don't know how Chris and Taylor were, but I was just like, I was like, now I was starstruck. I was just like, what?
Oh, that was way too nice right there.
No. I'm serious. I mean, I was just like, are you serious? Like, that's the Bear. And I can't remember who it was. It might've been Luke. It might've been Mikkel. It might've been someone who was, it might've been Kelly Crane.
Could have been Kelly
Crane. Cause Kelly was who hired me, before she left. And she said, you can't tell anybody. Anyway. And then, you know, we cleaned and organized and you came back in and, you know, and I think I was probably kind of like standing up straight now. Looking at me. Yeah. Now I was actually paying attention to who you know, what you were saying. And anyway, so I remember that day just because that's who I got. I actually met the Bear. And, you know, I never told anybody who you were. And I think everybody who worked there, it was kind of like, you know, you don't share. And I'm just kind of amazed, you know, for so long, no one knew who you were. Like, how did you kind of keep that secret?
It was hard. It really was. I mean, it sucked because I had friends that didn't know what I did. My kids couldn't tell anybody. And we'd show up at events and I would just stay in the van, you know, and Luke would go out and get all the details and come back and tell me, you know, you're going in, you're doing this, you know, there's this on the left, there's that on the right, the stage is straight and give me all the details I needed. So when I ran in, I had a little bit of an idea what we needed to do, but I never met anybody. And that was the hard part, is we'd show up at events and I'd literally, on some events, sit in the van for an hour and a half, 2 hours, just because I couldn't get out.
Dang.
And it sucked. So, but I mean, it needed to happen though, because it helped with the stigma, the character, the stigma I'm looking for.
The persona. That's yeah.
The persona of the character. See, Matt, you're much smarter than I am. But yeah, so it was great. I mean, I loved it. I hated that part of it.
Yeah.
And I hated putting the makeup on. Makeup sucked.
Oh, we're going to get to that. So as far as appearances go, before I ever worked for the Jazz, another side note, I worked at Discover Card.
Yep.
And there was a time, I want to say it was around fall or before the season started, because we had like some company meeting and the Jazz Bear is here. And we were all like, what? Jazz Bear? And then you ran in and you came up to the center and they say, we need one BYU and one Utah fan. So I assume it's around like the time they were playing that game or something. Yep. So I rose my hand as the Utah fan. And then I came up and we did a push-up contest. I don't know if you remember
I do remember this. So that was you? That was not. Was it really?
So Discover Card, the office world. It was like, when I worked there, it was like out in like Sandy, like 90 South, like off the freeway. So
it's not there anymore? Because like, that's where
I think they moved it to like near Salt Lake Community Campus or college campus over there. Anyway, so we go up there and we're doing push-ups. And at the time I was like really into like fitness and I was like, you know, and I'm like, I'm beating the bear. And we're doing push-ups. And the other guy, the BYU fan, of course, you know, drops out because he's a BYU fan.
Of course.
Anyway, so like we're going, we're probably at like 30 or 40 push-ups or whatever. And I didn't technically won because I think you looked over at me and you're like, are you ever going to stop?
I really did.
And then you like kind of put your leg on me and kind of like got me to stop. And then I, in my mind, I'm like, I just won, you know, like, cause he, you know, he kind of like
I cheated.
Anyway. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe you remember that.
But I totally remember that. No, I swear to you, I do. Because what had happened is I was looking over at you thinking, oh, okay, he's got to wear out here pretty soon. And the thing that's hard is when you start to get up in those reps, I start to breathe harder and I don't get the air.
It wasn't a fair fight.
No. And you know what? You'd still beat me.
You were in a costume.
No, but you would still beat me. It's just, that was the other part is with that head and the costume, I had about another 25 pounds on me.
Oh yeah.
But you still would have won. I was never good at push-ups.
So I
was
never. I need to put that on my resume. You know, I beat the Jazz Bear.
Dude, that's awesome.
You can do a one-handed handstand on a 50-foot ladder.
Because I totally remember that. Because I remember I put my foot on you and I continued to try and do push-ups.
Yes. Yes. You put your foot on me and instantly I was just like, I won. Like, it's over. I just did it. Like,
just, you should have just jumped up and given me the, you know, like, loser sign.
I think head. I, you know, as my dorky way, I probably just like started cheering or something, but yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I remember that. Yeah. I can't believe that was you.
That was me.
That's funny.
Yeah. Small world. So, okay. So that was a side note on, you know, you mentioned appearances and that was an appearance and the Jazz Bear made a lot of appearances. So in a given year, you know, roughly how many appearances would you say you made in a year?
Between 250 and 300 and about 97-98% of those were charity.
Dang.
Back in the day, I remember, you know, it was always about going out and getting a paid appearance. And then, which was nice because, it, you know, I got some of that money. But I realized that it just wasn't what I enjoyed. You know what I mean? Going mm-hmm. out and sitting at a gas station for an hour, it just is no fun. I don't care how much you pay you. And, but, you know, going to Special Olympics and being able to be part of an event and help an event and what was amazing. And that's what I enjoyed and that's where I wanted to take it. So the team thankfully let me do that.
That's a lot of event. I mean, that's all year round. I mean,
it really was.
During the season, I mean, it could be a game day where you're working all night, but you're going to be at a school or two schools.
Oh, that's happened. And I've slept at the arena because I knew that. I'm like, okay, I got a game tonight. I'm not going to get out of here till 11-ish. By the time I get home, it'll be midnight. By the time I go to bed, it's 12:30, 1 o'clock, and I got to be back downtown ready to go to do a Big Buddha or a Casey Scott event
at 5 a.m.
You've been there. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I would just, Luke and I would crash. I remember we took, there was, this was great, but we took some reclining chairs from there was a concert that was there, and I remember they had these reclining chairs over by the big door.
Okay.
And I was like, well, Luke, what do you think? So we had these recliners, these really nice recliners in our cage for half the year until they found them. And they were like, hey, we were looking for those.
That's funny.
But we slept in those that night. I remember that.
Dang. So you mentioned, you know, switching over to, you know, wanting to do more charitable things. You know, I went to a lot of those, you know, as far as hospital visits, schools, DARE programs, and it's amazing. Like I said, I was a kid who grew up a Jazz fan, right? So when you started, I was 10 years old. So I was born in 84.
Jesus.
So in 94, when you
You've
started.
You aged me.
So that just gives you a sense of I was a kid who grew up loving the Jazz Bear. And so anyway, I was one of those kids. No, I don't think you ever came to my school. You came to my Discover Card job. But I just think that had to have been because yeah, games and the excitement and the sled and that's awesome. But I think, and I think I maybe have talked to you about this a little bit, but I think the kids and seeing the smiles and their eyes and their, the sheer just like awe of the bear is probably what made you keep coming back.
It was. And you know, I mean, like I said, you know, just being part of an event that created moments for kids that were either, you know, bullied, sick, whatever it is, but that just need that moment in time to just forget about what they're dealing with, be able to put a smile on their face. That's what made it for me, is creating moments for kids that needed it at those times.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it probably never got old.
It didn't. No, I mean, I loved, like, I'm still doing it now. You know, I've had a couple people reach out to me, and being that I don't have the jazz to access, I reach out to Jared Youngman over at the Utah Grizzlies, and he's starting to help me create moments for these kids. You know, like there was a child, name was Scott, and, you know, he was being bullied and little special needs and stuff. And, I called Jared and said, "Hey man, you know, can you help this boy out?" And he's like, "Absolutely." And brought him in, got to meet the team, did the roll call, got to high five all the players, and the smile on his face, he sent me the video, and the smile on his face was priceless. And I love that. I love the fact that, you know, I wasn't even there for the event. I just loved being able to facilitate it, know somebody that could help me out and do it. And then I just 2 days ago got another text from somebody, and they're like, "Hey, this is going on with this boy, can you help me out?" And I, "Jared, can you do it again?" He's like, "Yeah. Yep, bring it on." So I love the fact that the people that I know out in the community that I've worked with for many years, I've known Jared 100 years, and are willing to help me out, to help these kids, you know.
That's amazing.
I love it.
That's the stuff that's like, I don't know, I have a soft spot for kids, you know, and maybe it's because I'm a dad now, you know, and I think when you become a dad, things, your perspective on everything changes. And when you see a kid just happy, it's almost just like magic, because it's pure. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a little kid, they're going to be honest. Their emotion's honest. If they don't care, if they're not excited, if they're not happy, then their face is going to tell you. But when they are, like, they can't hide it. And right. It's like you would see that, and it, I know we're talking about this, and this whole podcast isn't about this topic, but I don't know. It's just really cool. So I just think, you know, 300 appearances a year times 25 years, like, that's a lot of happy kids.
The hardest part about it though was all the birthday parties of my own kids that I missed, and all the events of my kids that I missed. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that's hard now that I look back. I'm always just like, man, I missed out on a lot, you know. I'm trying to create moments for them, but I'm missing moments of my own.
Yeah.
So it was a little tough.
That is hard. You mentioned like the suit.
Yep.
And I don't think most people realize, so you said it adds about 25 pounds.
Yep.
Like, if you were to say, like, temperature wise, you know, like how hot was it in there? Well, can you compare? I mean, are you in a sauna? Is that, you know, I think most people felt a sauna. Was it not that hot? I mean,
I think if you put on a full snowmobile suit and a helmet with a visor and big winter gloves and big winter boots, and I swear to you, and then go for a jog in 90 to 100 degree heat. There you go.
And do one hand handstands.
And do one hand handstands. Yeah. I mean, there was just, Like an example, as I remember back in the finals, I wanted to see how much I was sweating out because we were so busy and we were running the whole time. And I remember grabbing a stack of shirts and I weighed them and then I used them. And every time I'd come in for a break, I would swap out shirts and throw them in this pile on top of the scale. And it came out at the end of the night it was between 8 and 9 pounds of water weight. It is insane. A night just for those finals.
Did you have to like carb up? I mean,
I did. I started taking electrolyte pills because what would happen is a lot of times I'd take off, I'd do the intros, I was hitting the suites, I was in the upper bowl making visits, and I'd come down and be about halftime, but I'd been moving the whole time. And I remember there were many times where I was just delirious. Like, my electrolytes were so off. I'd stagger in, I'd sit down, I'd put my head in my hands because I was so sick. And Luke was pumping Powerade down my throat. It's just like... So, but the electrolyte pills helped when I started taking those. But yeah, dude, I'd mess myself up. Did I remember you? Putting a heart rate monitor on me one time, and I remember I was out there and I came back and I remember almost blacking out one time and I was like, Jesus. And I went back and I looked and my heart rate was up to 223.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how come I was blacking out. I mean, I could just see like that circle coming. And I remember I just was like, just keep your legs moving. Get to the corner. Don't let anybody know. And,
Did you ever have a moment like that? Because I know that, I was going to ask, do you ever have a moment like that during, like, out on court, right? And I know that, you know, you're back in your area kind of getting ready for on court stuff, so maybe not. But, yeah, did you ever have moments where you were feeling it and almost passed out on court?
Yes. There was that one. And then there was another one where I was trying to lift that big sign, and I'd been running, so I've been, like, already tired, kind of hyperventilating already, and I went to lift it and I was like, and you know how you push and all of a sudden you start seeing those stars and I could hear the crowd fading away and I was like, uh-oh. So I thought I was gonna go down, so I dropped the sign and then I kind of like staggered around until I got my blood back in my head, and then I went over and tried it again. But you know, I've only been knocked out I think 3 times in my suit doing a show. I remember one time I was belaying in, or not belaying, rappelling.
Yeah.
And I was coming in upside down, and I didn't realize that James Beatty, when he hooked up my rope, we usually use a static rope, which doesn't have much stretch, and he put in a dynamic rope, and I didn't realize it, and when I was coming in upside down, I used to just hit my brake a couple feet before I'd hit the floor, and I would stop. Well, when I did it, it stretched, and I went straight into the floor. Boom. And I just remember waking up and I was laying on the floor and they were already into intros and I'm looking around. You could see people looking at me like, what the hell is he doing? I got up and I'm like, woo, I'm not dead.
So James Beatty, come on, dude. Give me.
No. And then I remember another time I was dunking and I missed the mat and my head. So the mat landed probably halfway on my back and my head hit the floor and like cooled me. And I remember I was in that frozen state where your arms and hands are all jacked up, but I was completely aware but could not move, and I was kind of in the fetal position, and they came over to stand me up and I couldn't put my legs out and everything was shaky. And then I remember another time, and a guy, his name was Tennessee, he was a great guy but huge, and he played football for a university, so he's a big boy, and we were out doing power sumo ball. And he was one of the sumos, and I remember running and jumping and trying to take him out, and he, no kidding, caught me. And I bet you in suit I was about 245, and he caught me and grabbed me and dove and like plowed me into the ground. And I remember he got up, and I remember I laid there, and I literally had to take a check of my body. I was just like, okay, I can move my feet, I can move my legs, fingers are still moving. Okay, I thought he broke my back. So there were some fun moments.
Well, I mean, these things, especially like the environment in the suit, I don't think people, you know, the average fan never is going to think about that. I remember, you know, going back during a timeout to like check on you or whatever, to be like, oh,
just to come say hi.
Yeah. Just come say hi, you know, cause you know, during a close game, the way that they do the game ops is like fourth quarter, they don't really schedule a lot because they have what's called a hot timeout, where they want to just blow everything off so that they can keep the fans going, which is bear time, right? Like that's where bear comes out and the bear keeps the crowd going crazy because they don't want to lose that
momentum.
The whole point of a timeout of the opposing team is to shut the crowd up.
Right.
And so they want to keep the crowd hot. So I was probably coming back to be like, oh, you know, could you come out? Or are you good? Whatever. And I just remember coming out and I think, because you had all these fans, you know, you would go back there and you would take off the suit and your eye makeup's like smearing and you're just like I was sweating crying. And I think it was the first time I just kind of like got the realization of myself. I was just like, dang, like that is a job in and of itself, keeping yourself okay, you know, hydrated and dry and all that.
Oh, brother, it was a great weight loss program.
I'm sure. I mean, well,
literally could eat anything.
You're a specimen. And I remember thinking like, that dude is ripped. That's
way too nice.
No. That dude is ripped.
Not like, anymore. I'm heavy now. But no, you know, I appreciate that. But yeah, it was hot, and it was an amazing workout program, because I remember during the summer I would try and bulk myself up a little bit fat-wise because I knew I would burn it all off during the season, and yeah. I needed something to burn. So because I remember I'd drop a lot of body fat percentage by the time spring came around.
I'm sure you did. So you mentioned, you know, injuries, and I think that's kind of like a, you've been asked this question, I'm sure, a lot, you know, injury wise or surgery wise. And did you lose count?
No. I love telling this. So I've kept count. So it's 10 surgeries, 27 torn ligaments, tendons and muscles, and 153 or 158 staples and stitches.
Okay. That's pretty nuts.
Yeah. So it's been, that's the other hard thing is, you know, you sit there and you're like, you know, was everything I did worth it? You know, I'm jacking myself up. And I don't know. Sometimes I scratch my head, you know, because when I'm 70, I'm going to be miserable.
I was about to ask, I mean, how do you feel today?
I feel amazing.
Oh, that's
good. I really do. I mean, like right now, if I was still working, I'd be going up the stairs sideways. My ankles would be so bad because they're bone on bone. I need to get them replaced. My knee's bad. Needs to be replaced.
Dang.
So, but I loved what I did for 24 years.
Well, some of those stunts, I mean, you have the famous ones. You mentioned the rappel, which I think maybe after you hit your head, they kind of took that away.
No, they took it away actually after Owen Hart, that wrestler. Yep.
Yeah, I know that story.
He died and then they banned it.
They were just banned.
Yep. And then, but this is the funny thing. So we used to rappel, and it's where you kind of control your own descent and stuff. And then Owen Hart died and they banned it. But then they said, okay, you can do it again, but you have to belay in. But Owen Hart died belaying in.
Okay.
So I was just like, for, you know, but it is, they just wanted somebody else to have responsibility.
Yeah.
Because rappelling to me is way more safe.
Okay.
Because when you're standing on a railing 120 feet up and I'm looking at one, that's Sergeant Logan, I call him Sergeant Logan, and Drew and Buck and those guys. I'd sit there at the railing and I'd look over and I'd be like, I'd always go, you got me? It's like, holy cow, because you're just looking at them like, just don't drop me. And
right.
Then you'd lean back and they'd grab weight and.
Dang.
Yeah.
Another one that I think was super famous that you stopped doing, I can imagine why, was the, you know, the fire ring, whether you're jumping through or you're biking through.
Yep.
I mean, is that just because, you know, it's fire and eventually they're like,
you probably remember this. Do you remember during one of the playoff games when I think it was the Charlotte Hornets or the New Orleans Hornets back in the day? But they're playing the San Antonio Spurs. It was during one of the playoff games. I sent, the character down there, my fire ring, and I tried to tell him how to do it and how to make it work. And he went out there and practiced. And I told him, you need to refill your fire extinguishers and you need to start at the same point and move opposite directions. Otherwise your fire is going to just follow and chase. And he didn't refill them, didn't start in the same spot. And the fire ring kept burning. They didn't know what to do. Instead of running it off the floor, one of the building maintenance guys grabbed a powder fire extinguisher and shot powder all over the floor, causing a 45-minute delay.
Oh, dang.
So they banned. Instead of...
So it's nothing you did.
No. It was the NBA throwing a baseball bat at a fly instead of using his fly swatter. You know?
Yeah.
But
dang. Because that was
not my fault.
That was fun.
The New Orleans Hornets.
Did you enjoy that
stuff? Loved it. That was my... I loved... You know, like the moments, like I'd watch video, and I remember one time I was jumping through the fire ring and my foot caught on fire, and you can see it blaze up, and then when I land, the impact caused it to poof, and snuff out. It was really cool.
That's
I loved
cool.
it. But I just like making people feel a little uneasy when I do my stunts.
Oh, believe me.
Yeah.
I sat there a lot of nights, and I think a lot of it was like I mentioned, like the one-handed handstand stuff, where I was just like, I was up there... Don't do it. Like I didn't want you to do it. Cause I think I remember one, did you like blow a shoulder or
something? You were there for that year?
Yeah. I remember one year where I was like watching you and you were doing it and all of a sudden something, you could see something pop and you kind of just like kind of
tore
like,
a ligament there.
And I was just like, oh no. And I think you kind of just like slid down and like, you know, you're holding your arm up or whatever.
I did. I remember. Cause what happens is when I do these stunts is I have a focus moment. You know, everybody talks about, oh, they're in the zone. And that's what would happen when I do the bike or the sled. Like, the crowd goes away, the noise does, and I just have this tunnel vision. And I was up on the ladder. The same thing was going on. I could just hear myself breathing, and I could feel my body from my hand to my toes as I was trying to lever over to balance on one arm. And I was so just focused on the balance part that I didn't realize I was completely stretching out a ligament till it snapped. Mm-hmm. And then when it snapped, I fell, as you saw, and then I came down. And
yeah.
But I didn't feel it. I should have felt the pain, but I was just so focused on making sure that I could find my balance point that my ligament tore.
Dang. Well, I mean, I think the idea of Bear and just like those stunts is, we mentioned, to get the crowd really going. You know, like when you would do those stunts, the crowd was like in awe, and then they were ready to erupt.
Yeah.
It was almost like you were the transition from them cheering for the Jazz, and then they're cheering for you, and now they're cheering for the Jazz again. I think the whole point was so that they don't lose that. And I think it really worked. I mean,
I hope so, because otherwise I was doing it for nothing.
How much did you feed off of the crowd in those times?
Oh, a ton. Because I know that there were times when I'd walk out there and the crowd was dead and there was nothing I could do to get them up. And I just, you're trying, you just don't feel it. But I had a GoPro on a couple times, and something I didn't realize is how much I talk and scream in my head and what I say, which was expletives. It was like, because I'd get so excited when the crowd was big, I'd be like, you know, woohoo, and you could hear it.
Yeah.
I never realized I was even making noise. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like along the lines of like excitement and like you were at a lot of games, I mean, 25 years of games, right? And
only missed seven.
Well, that's a crazy stat in and of itself. But like, I know for my, I have my reasons why I love being at games. And when you're at every game, it is your job and it becomes a job, and certain elements of it are just kind of like, where like maybe your first day on the job, you were loving it. Right.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, it's like that part of it, it's just kind of like you're callous to it, but there were still times I loved. And a lot of it was kind of like the excitement of like the intros and whatever, which you had a big part of. But for you, like what were the times after all the years, all the games, what did you still love to do during games? Like what got you going during games?
My favorite time was pregame, when I could roll out on the court and all I would do is I would look and scan the crowd for a child that was sick or had a disability of some sort. And I loved being able to bring them out on the court and create a moment for them that they would have never had and that nobody else could do. I loved being able to walk them over to players. I'd get them on the camera when they were, with Bowler Jack and those guys. That's really what I live for. I loved being able to just create these moments that they will remember for the rest of their lives. I love that.
That's awesome. Along the lines of players and games and stuff, and you saw a lot of players, a lot of teams come through there. Did you have... when I was a fan, you always heard, oh yeah, the Bear works out with the team and he works out at the practice center. Like, did you have a relationship with the players and the teams?
I did, the old school team.
Yeah.
Back in the day when John, Carl, Hornacek, B. Russ, all those guys. Yeah, I remember working out with Carl Malone over at, across the street at the Triad Center. There was a workout facility there. He's amazing. That man is a machine. So... I didn't keep up at all, but I'd end up over at the practice facility and working out, and it was fun. I worked out with Ostertag a lot, and
he worked out a lot.
He really did, actually. But the thing that nobody knows is how flexible he was.
Okay.
So here he is seven whatever, and he was more flexible in the Chinese splits than I was.
Really?
I swear to you, there was a machine that you would sit in and you'd put your legs in it and you'd crank this little lever and it would spread your legs apart.
Okay.
And he could get it farther than I could.
Really?
He was so flexible. Yeah.
I'm trying to picture.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy. But he was super, super flexible and just nobody knew that.
Dang.
Plus you probably didn't know too that when he quit, he went down, when he was down south, he was playing hockey.
I think I do remember.
Isn't that
funny? Yeah.
There's like a picture he sent me and he's just towering over this hockey player. It's
I don't want to see him coming at me if I'm
Oh man. Honest. That would be catastrophic.
I'm sure. Okay, so one thing that I always wonder is, so I want to talk about like Coach Sloan a little bit. Is, you were around the team a lot, you're in the tunnel, you're in the huddle, you're in, I assume, like the locker room. Right? Like, how was it was Coach Sloan just really cool? Was he welcoming? Did he allow you to be places where you wanted, or maybe you shouldn't have been, or like, how was your relationship with Coach Sloan?
You know, it's funny. Coach Sloan was the most intimidating man I've ever met. He scared me to death, but he was super nice and he got it. Like, when I got there, I remember going down talking to him, and he said I could come in the locker room. I went in, got therapy with the players. I mean, and the thing that was cool about that is it made me feel part of the team, and it made me push myself to go out and kill myself out on the court to try and get the fans involved, because I felt part of the team. So, he just, I always worried that I was going to, I never wanted to wreck that relationship with us. And I have a funny story. So one day I went into the locker room, and I thought it'd be funny to put a rubber poop on the toilet.
Okay.
And it was in the middle of the afternoon, and I thought Brian Zettler or Gary Briggs would find it, and they'll laugh, and they'll throw it away. Well, the game happens, and I'm rolling into the locker room, and Jerry's in the middle of his interview, and he looks at me, looks back, and then shoots a sharp look at me, and right in the middle of his interview, he goes, "You, I need to talk to you." And I'm just like, "Okay, Jerry," and I just keep rolling into the locker room. And when I get in there, I notice that I, like, everybody is parting, and nobody is saying a word for me. It was like the Red Sea parting. Nobody would – it was like I walked in with the plague, and people just getting away from me. And I was like, uh-oh, something's going on. So I see Mark McCowan, and he goes, "John, just get out of here. Go through coach's door, leave, let the weekend happen, let it blow over, and let Jerry forget about it." And I was like, "Well, what happened?" He goes, "Just go, just leave." And I'm like, "But Mark," I go, "tell me, what's up?" And he goes, "John, just leave before he gets in here." So I get frustrated. So I start walking towards the door, and then I see Kevin O'Connor. And Kevin O'Connor grabs me, "John, just get out of here." He goes, "You got to leave." And I'm like, "Kevin, what is going on?" So then he looks at me, and he just goes, "Listen, so apparently you put a rubber poop in the toilet." He goes, "Well, Darren Williams found it, and the players were playing with it at the 6 o'clock where they should be sitting around, at their 6 o'clock meeting when they should be sitting around thinking about the game. Well, Jerry comes rolling in, and they're throwing this rubber poop around the locker room." And he blows up and asks where that came from. And instantly, I'm going to say this out over the air, "Thank you, Gary, and thank you, Brian, for throwing my butt under the bus." So then Jerry calls in the coaching staff, the training staff, all the players, and just lights them up. So Kevin looked at me afterwards, and he goes, "And when this blows over," he goes, "I really need you to come in, talk to the players and to the coaches and apologize." And I was like, "Oh, my hell." I'm like, "Okay." So I'm getting ready to leave, and as I turn, there's like this doorway. Do you remember the doorway when there was the locker room and then the doorway that went into the coach's offices? And I literally just froze, and I stopped, and I was trying to play dead, like, "Don't move, don't breathe," because I saw Jerry walking down the hall, and I saw him look at me, and I didn't even look at him. I was just looking straight ahead. So I see him look at me, look away, and then you could just see him like inflate, and he comes over and he starts poking me in the chest, and he's like, "What do you think you're doing?" And he goes on and on about how, you know, "I can't do that in there." And I, you know, anyway. So then it was crazy because I'm just, some of the expletives is what I can't get out.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Everybody knows Jerry Sloan.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there. My legs were shaking, and I thought I was going to pass out. I thought, I am so dead. And then the coolest part was he got done yelling at me, and I could visibly see Jerry's shoulders drop. And he just exhaled, and he goes, "John." And just like this father voice, he goes, "John, I'm trying to run a team here. You can't be doing that," any expletive crap, you know, basically, in the locker room. And anyway, he was just really cool about it, and he just put his hand on my shoulder, and he literally was just like, "Go home. I'll see you on Monday." And I was like, "Holy crap, did that just happen?" You know, I mean, I just got lit up by Jerry Sloan.
Right.
That's kind of my,
like, a bucket list
badge of honor.
That's
so
funny.
But it was awesome.
That's a great, yeah, that's so a great story. Thanks for sharing that. That is funny. What was it like being around? Because I never was around Larry Miller.
Yep.
What was it like working for Larry?
Larry was amazing, believe it or not. This is the funny thing. So when I first started, he gave me his cell number. And being that I'm a little farm boy, I don't know titles, and I still to this day don't care about titles. I care about people, and And he gave me his cell number, and I didn't realize, you know, that he was the owner of the team. But when I was in the CBA, I still hung out with all the owners of the team. So I called Larry all the time. And about 6 months into calling him all the time, I get a called into Grant's office, and he's like, John, he goes, I totally understand Larry gave you his number, but you got to slow down on calling him. So I started laughing. I was like, okay. But I remember one time I was practicing skiing down the stairs. This is back during the finals. And I remember him coming into the arena and watching. Then he came over and started giving me ideas on how to, because I was trying to figure out a way to keep these boards up against the stairs so that my skis wouldn't catch into the chair or into the railing. Mm-hmm. And it was so cool. So he literally sat there for about 30 minutes and tried to help me out with this. And I was really thankful for that. And then there was another moment where I was having a birthday party, and I had all the mascots were sitting outside by one of the door areas there, right, kind of right by his car. He came out, walked over, said, good job. And he said, are these the mascots? I said, yeah. And I introduced them all. And the craziest thing, so we're all sitting there with all of our stuff, and he goes, well, you guys need a ride to the hotel? And I started laughing. I'm like, Larry, no. I go, we're good. We're waiting for the van. I go, I don't think all this stuff will fit in your car. He goes, oh, no, I got a big trunk. And but it was just, that was Larry, you know? He was so cool that way. And then I remember one of the scary moments with Larry is when I asked him if we could shoot a video. And the whole video, and I'm sure you've seen it, is where I get dropped from an airplane and I land on his car.
Okay, yeah.
If you remember this one. So I told him, I said, Larry, I don't want to drop on your car. I'm going to dent it. Oh, no. That's 12-gauge metal and you can't dent that. And I'm like, okay. So I'm standing on his windshield so that my feet were just out of frame, and I literally had to just kind of jump, and then I was tied in ropes and I landed on his hood. Then he comes over and he kind of rolls me off, and if you watch on the video, the dent that was there was just horrible. So I remember I got up, I look, and I'm like, oh my hell, I just dented Larry's car. And he's like, nope, don't worry about it. I know somebody who can fix it. And he laughed. And I was just, so it was really cool. I really appreciate that relationship with Larry and how much he trusted me.
Yeah. I wish he was around, you know, as a fan, just to kind of see what the team's like and what the arena looks like. And if we win a title, I mean, dang, God, that would be awesome.
Yeah, no, it would be great.
One quick thing. I don't know if you have any Jeff Hornacek stories. Maybe you do. This is the 14th episode of this podcast. And I started the tradition of, you know, well, let's tie it to a number of player ads. So Hornacek was number 14, the most famous 14, right? So most people don't have personal stories. Do you have any stories or memories? Or I know he was a coach for a bit for us, but he played for us for years.
Honestly, I don't really have that many stories. I think it's just more memories of the fact that he was so approachable and so nice. Got to know his kids. I love the fact that when he would show up when he was coaching, I'd run over and he'd give me a hug and ask me how the family was doing. And that was Jeff. I mean, Jeff was just the nicest guy. You know, I'm trying to think, if I asked him to come and do events, he would show up. But I never had those moments like with Ostertag or with Carl and stuff. You know, like Ostertag, he came to all my kids' birthday parties, and Carl, we'd go ride motorcycle or go work out. I mean, so I don't have those with Jeff, but I think something that's kind of funny though about Jeff is I remember when I first started, he pulled into the back lot, and he was in one of those Bronco 2 kind of trucks, you know?
Okay.
And which is great, but the windshield was cracked. The paint was kind of faded. And him and his wife get out, and they walk in. And I seriously sat there, and I was just like, that's cool. He's not driving a Bentley. He's driving his old truck that looked like he just got out of college, you know?
Right.
So I thought that was really cool that he was just really humble that way, and he didn't need to have anything fancy to show anything off.
Yeah. Well, One topic I wanted to bring up, mostly because I worked with these guys for so long, and obviously you did, is the Bear Crew.
You gotta love the Bear Crew.
And you know, obviously we mentioned Luke, who I think was like the godfather of the Bear Crew before he, you know, retired and left. And you know, I think of Chad and Trevor Riley and, you know, Brian and these guys. And I'm sure there was other guys before me, and there's guys after me, and just like you guys had an awesome bond, and
we were brotherhood, man.
Yeah, like you couldn't have done it without those guys.
I relied on those guys like crazy, and I trusted them with my life, like literally. You know, I'd go out there, and they were the ones holding the base of the ladders. They were the ones that, were always looking up. If I fell, they always talked about, oh, well, we'll catch you. And I was like, no, do not catch me. Just let me hit. I go, I'll end up hurting you. The Bear crew was unique in the sense that there was a number of guys that, like Chad Larson, Brian Paxton and stuff, they'd been there since I started. And then there was Trevor Riley, who came on board, and Ryan Archibald. And we were like the group of banditos, man. We'd show up at games. You know, then we pulled in, you know, there was Devin, there was Conley and Kat. Ryan Kelleher was one of them, too. All amazing, amazing guys, and all guys that I trusted. And you remember, we used to come up with some of the craziest games. And before the games, we'd sit and play these games. And after games, we'd play other, I don't know. They were just, they're games that we can't really talk about.
Yeah. You remember something? Oh, I remember.
Because they all had to do with your groin getting something thrown at it, or having the t-shirt gun, and you'd have to bend over and get shot in the butt at 250 PSI. That hurt. So, I mean, so it was fun stuff like that. And the bond was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, it'll never be that way again. I mean, because, you know, when I left, everybody else left. So, I mean, it's kind of sad because that whole 25 years of camaraderie ended.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, you know, and I talked a little bit about being an intern, and when you're an intern and you come into this group of guys who've been there, and it's the freaking Jazz Bear, and it was always, you guys were always so nice to me once I went through the gauntlet.
You have to go through the gauntlet.
So once I did go through these games you're talking about, then I was kind of part of the group, or at least, you know, I felt like I could just kind of be one of the guys. And I could go back there and chat with you guys and just come back. And because, you know, not a lot of people ever went back into like the Bear Cave. And, you know, you had these curtains, and like when the curtain got pulled, everyone looks. And then if you're someone who's okay to come in, it's like, oh, yeah, what's up? And, you know, and once you got that nod and it was okay to come back, it was almost like you were part of this brotherhood.
Yep.
And it was always really cool to be part of that, you know, like it was a fun crew.
It was amazing. My favorite was watching Trevor and Chad and those guys pick on the new guys.
Yeah.
there was a pecking order. Yeah. And what they did is they tested you. They'd push on you a little bit to just see, like, what kind of guy you were. And if you just played along and you were like, uh-huh, fun with it, you were in. You were golden with them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pushed even a little bit, like, I remember Spencer Brown, if you remember Spencer?
Yeah.
He pushed back a little bit, and they like, doubled it. It was just like, holy cow. So they picked on him hard because he pushed back.
Yeah. Good dudes. Good memories. They
were fun. It was amazing times.
I mean, you could have your own you should have your own podcast. Like, you could talk about memories and games and players and appearances for hours. You know, I mean, we're just kind of briefly touching on stuff. We're already, you know, at an hour. So much of this is just fun to hear for Jazz fans. You know, Jazzed is, I kind of started it as a place for fans, you know, for people to hear fun stories and to kind of get to know stuff that they might not know. And I think there's no better person to talk to than you. I mean, you were there for so long.
You're amazing.
You saw
Thanks.
So many things and so many players and so many games. And
it just all blends together now. I mean, cause like you said, there was just so much. There were so many great memories. And I mean, things that I'll remember till the day I die.
I'm sure you will. Well, I mean, thanks for welcoming me to the group.
Anytime, man. You're good people, man. Good people.
Well, I know I was just like this tall intern who was just trying to not step it on any toes and trying to get the Taco Bell shirts ready and whatever else we were doing, you know.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah. But before I let you go, you know, you kind of get a sense for who people are, and hopefully you're prepared. Your favorite TV show of all time. What do you got?
Whoo. Favorite TV show. I want to say like MASH. And then Gilligan's Island. Maybe that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to watch MASH all the time. So I'd say MASH.
I had Craig Bowlerjack on this podcast.
Yeah.
He said MASH.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bowler loves MASH.
Because we're old school.
Yeah. MASH was one of those shows where my parents liked it, and it would come on every night at like 10:30 or whatever it was, 11. And once I heard that music, I would instantly turn it off. because I was a kid, and once the Simpsons or Married with Children or whatever else was on right before it was over, you know, on channel 13 at whatever time, then MASH started and was like, okay, that's time for bed. Click. Yep. So I never really gave MASH a fair shake, and maybe
MASH was awesome.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's on Netflix or if you can even go back and watch the old MASH.
No, they still play it. I just saw it. I was at somebody's office and they had the TV going and MASH was on, and I literally just got sucked in. I sat there and was like, oh, I remember this episode. I've seen it 5 times, but I remember it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much for the time. Thanks for the memories. Like I said, we could sit here for hours, but you know, you're a busy man.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, we should.
Dead serious. Let's do it again. Maybe even bring in a couple of the Bear Crew guys. That's what we should do.
That'd be fun.
Let's do it.
That'd be fun.
We'll set it up if you have the mics, and we'll literally bring in some of the Bear Crew guys. And if you want to hear stories,
that'd be fun.
We'll tell you stories.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Dang, that'd be fun. Thanks again to John. I normally would shout you out on, I don't know, do you have a Twitter account? Do you have anywhere where you want the public to follow you? Or
just, I don't know, really. Yeah. I don't know how to follow. What do you mean? I really don't know. I'm not a social media guy. Yeah. I started a Facebook account and an Instagram account, and I just post stuff when we do charity events.
Yeah, okay. Well, John Abzey, if you're inclined to see what he's up to, and I know this is a different kind of episode where we're just talking, you know, about memories, but that's exactly what this is supposed to be about. Yeah. So, yeah, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. That was fun. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Go Jazz. Bye.